Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lei Zhang, and I work in the Mississippi State Health Department. I'm director of Office of Health Data and Research. Basically, our office provides the data to maternal children health, chronic illness, WIC program, tobacco control, and oral health. Before I get started my presentation, I would like to recognize other two authors. Dr. Bill Johnson, he's a professor in Pennington Medical Research Center at Louisiana State University. Jerome Coble is a professor from University of Southern Mississippi. So today the topic will be using orthogonal coefficient to test for trends in health survey data. Again, I have no relationship to disclose. Related to the background trend analysis, I look at actually our program book. I found actually quite a bit, you know, related to the abstract and a presentation related to the trend analysis. And trend analysis, you know, clearly is very useful tools that actually provide the insight in public health surveillance and monitoring. And also, you know, it's very useful actually to do forecasting, make some projection, evaluation. And, you know, for people working in the health department probably know, you know, we need to develop the state plan, you know, compare the state goal, compare to the health of people 2020. And so that's a very useful tools, actually, you know, for the trend analysis. A common goal, you know, for the trend analysis, actually, is to try to pick up the certain indicator. You know, when we monitor over the time and see is there a clear pattern, you know, either increase or decrease over the time. Relate to the health survey data, and you know, we have several surveillance systems actually in public health setting, and health department we've been working with CDC. One is youth risk behavior surveillance system, and you know, we call the WRBS for short. And this survey basically is collect the data, you know, from Mississippi. For our survey, collect Mississippi public high school and middle school in the six area, you know, relate to their you know, nutrition, sexual behavior, physical activity, tobacco use. The survey conducted actually every other year, in all the year, every spring in all the year. So we have the data actually back to 1993, 1995, until the most current data is 2011. So we're going to conduct another survey 2013 actually in the spring next year. Then we have National Survey of Children's Health, and basically survey the children actually from 0 to 17 related to the physical and emotional, their health. And that survey conducted every 4 years. Another one actually is the Mississippi Unique. We call the Mississippi Child and Youth Prevalence Obesity Survey. It's a CAPAS. And this survey actually used the same the sampling methodology as the WRBS. The only difference is actually the WRBS is self-reported. And for the CAPAS, basically, hire the nurses, actually measure the height and weight, then calculate the BMI. So we try to compare actually, you know, the actual measured data compared, you know, self-reported and see what's the difference. So the CAPAS only survey actually, you know, the weight and height. So we have data 5, 7, 9, 11. So it's the same pattern as the WRBS every other year and also conducted, you know, in the spring. Relate to the method for trend analysis, you know, common used method, you know, is the chi-square test for linear trend. And also, you know, actually, the other presenter also talked about the regression analysis. I'm glad I'm the last, so we already know that relates to the linear regression, and also talk about logistical regression. For this presentation, actually, you know, use the health data. I try to emphasize, actually, relate to the logistical regression. And the strengths actually using the regression analysis, we know actually the public health data, and most of the, it's quite a bit indicator actually is not continuous. You know, like a survey we conducted, have you ever been told by a doctor that you have diabetes? Basically, yes and no. And even for the obesity, and you know, we collect the height and weight, and we calculate the BMI, maybe it's the numeric, but you know, there are some studies they try to model about Z-score, and BMI value, but sometimes it's very difficult actually for the lay people, you know, to understand what's the Z-score. So we still categorize the BMI into the four categories with the obesity, overweight, you know, healthy weight and underweight. So we model the BMI as categorical. So it does have strengths, actually, use the regression analysis compared to the, you know, chi-square for trend, because, you know, it will allow us actually to control for other, you know, the variables we call the confounder or effect modifier, especially for the, you know, the Mississippi High School and Middle School. We know Mississippi actually is very unique. You know, we have the highest African-American population actually in our state. So sometimes we have to take control about racial, you know, the variable and see sometimes the trend, you know, using the chi-square after controlling for other factor, actually the trend will disappear. So actually, this I already talked about. In order to do the trend, actually, we need to have a variable we call the linear coefficient. You know, will allow us to get the linear quadratic or even a cubic trend. You know, over time, the function basically of the time will be viewed as an independent variable of here. You know, we'll put this actually in the regression model. So as you can see, you know, from my first two slides, actually the survey. You know, we've been getting involved, and some survey actually is equal space, you know, like a YRBS every other year, and CAPAS every other year. So if it's with equal spaced time, actually, you know, the coefficient, you know, we can find from the most of the textbook. If it is a survey year, 3 is mean, represent 3 surveys, and 3 here is maybe 2005, 2007, 2009. So, you know, in the experiment, they call actually, you know, this is a sample size, they call the degree of freedom. So basically, the trend actually, it'll be 3 minus 1. So we have a linear and quadratic. So the linear coefficient actually, you know, it'll be minus 1 for the first survey and 0 for the second survey and 1 for the last survey. It will have 3 surveys. And for the quadratic, actually, you know, it'll be 1 for the first and 2 for the second, so on and so forth. So this is related to the equal time spaced. And sometimes, you know, people, they said, what's the, you know, the theory behind that? Actually, I created the Excel sheet, you know, it'll help to understand. So we have a survey 5, 7, 9, and 11. So I named this as the number 1, number 2 survey, number 3, and number 4. So then the total, actually, sum of the survey year will be 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, give us 10. Divided by 4, so the mean actually 2.5. So then the linear actually equal the 1 minus 2.5 give us the minus, you know, 1.5, 2 minus 2.5 give us, you know, minus 0.05, and so on and so forth. And people usually don't like, you know, the number coefficient. It's a decimal place, so we can scale up. We can times 2, which won't change that function. So it becomes, you know, minus number 0.5 times 2 give us minus 3. This one times 2 give us minus 1, so on and so forth. So this, after square for minus 3, we call linear square, give us 9. Minus 3 square give us positive 9. Minus 1 square give us positive 1. So also I can obtain, you know, the following values. The total actually give us 20. So 9 plus 1 plus 1 plus 9 is 20. So the mean for this one, 20 divided by 4 give us 5. Then 9 minus 4 equal 9 minus 5 give 4. 1 minus 5 gives 4. So actually this we call the quadratic coefficient. Surely, you know, this 4 we can divide by 4, so which is give us actually the exactly, you know, the previous slides I put over there. Now, you know, the 2013 data will be ready very soon, so we're going to get the coefficient already set up, you know, to follow the similar approach. And, you know, sometimes people, they may say, well, if the survey is unequally spaced, actually, you know, it says the PROC ML can generate the linear function and quadratic function, but it is not the inference for this presentation. So for people interested, actually, we can generate the linear user says ML for the linear quadratic coefficient. Now the next step, actually, once we have this coefficient, we just sign actually different coefficient into different data set. And, you know, like a number for the linear, for this one, 903, we can put actually, you know, the 2005, this one, 2007, this coefficient will be 2009, this will be 2011. So the same thing, we can create another variable called the quadratic, basically assigned to another different data set. Then if it's the SAS data set, we can just combine into, we call the master file, the master data set. So the data file will look like this. I just use, this year of the survey, 2005, 2007, 2009, 2011. This is survey year 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the BMI. I just pick up just one variable as an example. Then TL will be like this. Okay. Then TKL will be like this. Actually, just sign to different year. Then just run the modeling. Actually, since this is a complex survey, we can use a SAS Survey Pro Freak and another statistical software we call Survey Data Analysis called Sudan. Basically, take into weights. And so Sudan, actually, the procedure we call PROC R logist. And as you can see, the model is very similar from, like a SAS regular PROC logistic. I have an all-com variable. I have an independent variable. And the last you can see is TL and TKL. Basically, it's just time coefficient. I just treat the both of them as kind of like independent variable. And once I run the analysis, it's going to give us a linear and a quadratic coefficient. As you can see, both of them, they're not statistically significant. So, and also we run some combined overweight and obesity, and also obesity only. So, and all the analysis will allow us actually to have the p-value relates to the linear coefficient and quadratic coefficient. So, we'll tell us, either we have a significant change on obesity for our public health, public school students from K to 12. As you can see, neither has shown a statistical significance. But for us, it's already a big achievement. We know actually Mississippi, the adults are number one obesity, children number one in obesity. And the first time actually we observe the obesity is no longer increased. So, the legislature and also public health, policymaker very happy. When we went a little bit further, actually, this is kind of like overall trend. But how about have some racial breakdown? And as you can see, after we break down by white and black, because white and black basically compose about 96% of the population. So Mississippi, we don't analyze, other races. As you can see, over the year, what you observe actually is a racial disparity increase. We see the white actually, gradually decreasing. Now you see African American. Actually, the gap is really getting bigger and bigger. And also, we do another analysis, actually, breakdown by elementary, middle, and high school. And very encouraging, we saw the elementary, actually, obesity rate, it's decreasing. So I think the funding is the University of Southern Mississippi obtained from the Bar and also Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Mississippi is one of the four states actually, observe actually some elementary school obesity decreasing. And the conclusion, as you can see, the orthogonal coefficient can be easily contributed and assigned to the data set. The coefficient also can be included actually in the logistic regression. And surely, as you can see, the SAS and Sudan output are very easy and could be easy to understand and interpret that. And we published this article in the State Medical Journal, so there's a detailed statistical method over there. If you are interested, surely, I'm more than willing to share. That's about my short presentation. Thank you.
Yes.
We
the data. I appreciate the comment. We actually looked at a number of different models, and like I said, we've worked on it for quite some time. This was the data, and mostly related to the survey instrument, wasn't giving us what we wanted. So this was one of the better models that we could come up with. But thank you. Yes. Yes.
Question of how the distribution of outlets is associated with how with different with the equity of access in a bad way, and with your distribution of that, and secondly, whether or not you're having plans to go ahead and link that data to more smoking behavior so you can make conclusions about
access. Yeah. I agree with you. That's why I tested it, because I wanted to see if it's just a vestige of population, or if it actually is, truly a targeted area as such. Whereas my chair would say, yes, it is targeted. He believes these areas are targeted. I personally think it's both. How about you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting question, and I wonder how it goes with their other paper, the Scott Novak paper, on that use propensity score modeling to set these up as treatment. And I was wondering about, and so you've only looked at a couple of different factors that may or may not be associated with mental control, and I'm wondering how you are finding to relate to some of the other people in the literature.
Well, we're still working on it. and definitely, yeah, I mean, the models have to be more sophisticated. Right now, they're pretty simple, so. But thank you for the reference. I'll look up the Kovac paper. K-O-V-A-C-S?
N-O-V-A-K.
Okay, thank you. N-O-V-A-K. Thank you very much.
Question for the first presenter.
Yeah.
Is that you use the best available data that you use, but given the instability, particularly of your lower estimate, you worry that even the bootstrap, you don't know what you don't know. So you worry about the instability of your lower estimate, even from the bootstrap.
I worry about every single one of those estimates. We got a lot of money to make those estimates, and there's a lot of money riding on those estimates. So yes, every model is bad, just some are useful. And I wholeheartedly agree that this is bad, like all models. The instrument, I came in 12 weeks into the instrument. The instrument had been in the field, was in the field. I could not change the instrument. So the data that we had to work with is what I had to model on, and that's plain and simple. And, so I worry quite a bit. We got a lot riding on that, so.
What was the rationale for taking the lower limit of the compass interval as your estimate?
Well, it wasn't the lower that was our lower confidence bound. It wasn't the lower limit of the confidence interval. The lower limit of the confidence interval was 618. The lower bound was 128. But basically, what did that signify? That was that answered the question: what's the lowest amount that I can budget for, that I should expect to budget for, which is what you always get asked. Show me what the estimate is, and then tell me what the least I can budget for is. And so, yeah. So if you look at the funding model, it says you have this much money, or you have until the money runs out, and then we'll split it equally. And so that was answered one of the questions that the funder wanted to know: what was the lower confidence bound?
So I guess this is that slide. I was a bit confused because originally I thought, okay, well, you have an estimate, and then with it you have some estimate of standard of variability, and therefore you get a confidence interval.
Right.
And then you were also using the lower limit from that confidence interval.
Maybe.
The amount of doctors you need.
Yeah, there was a lower confidence level, and then there was also a lower confidence bound. There was two. I mean, you can see it.
Okay. Other questions, comments?
So you look at the data, it's obviously not quadratic, right? There is no. So was there any reason to put that quadratic coefficient in there? And if you take that out, your p-value is like 0.08 for the linear one, mm-hmm. and if you take the quadratic coefficient out, then that would make it take it a little bit more towards 0.05, and then calculate like how much.
Well, to make sure I understand, so you mean they set the linear one when you put the quadratic coefficient over there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one of the reasons that you look at the public health, the data, actually some indicators, it's not clear linear. From the one certain period of time, it increased, and from another period of time, it decreased. So sometimes even they don't have the clear linear trend, but we also sometimes we break down by a certain, you know, the time point. Actually, we see during a certain time period they have a solid linear increase, then maybe another part of the period actually they decrease, then another period they increase again. So actually, give us the quadratic term will help us to understand the overall picture about the trend, because you know, most of the time you look at it, it may not have a specifically clear linear, but it will help us, you know, why at some point, you know, like the smoking, why that area actually over the years increased all starting into that, you know, time period saw decrease. So it can help us to pinpoint maybe something happening maybe among that area.
No, I still not quite understand the previous question about the lower bound and lower limit estimate. So my understanding is the confidence interval, the lower bound is the shear of variation reach, but then you all use it as a lower estimate for the for that particular lower limit. So those, to me, is different things.
That is my understanding as well. That's why I asked the question. Apparently, there was a difference.
Can you state your question again, please?
The lower bounded confidence interval is the variation that estimate can be reached within some confidence of distribution.
Right.
But you use it as the estimate for the lower kind of.
No, we didn't. Confidence, you know, we expect with 80%. Confidence that the true mean, or that the interval surrounds the true mean 80% of the time, or 95% of the time, or whatever. And that's a basic confidence interval interpretation. We were not using that as a point estimate. Okay, we didn't. I'm not presenting that as a point estimate. What I'm presenting in the most politically correct way to say this is, someone was interested in what's the lowest point that I can surround 80% of the time. it's not a point estimate, but it's a target figure that they'd have to take back for a budgetary purpose. And it's our point estimate is very clear. It's 4,655. That is our best guess. We're not going to get that funded. It's just very clear that that's not going to get funded, that point estimate. So what do we need to take? What's a number that we can take back and get funded?
So you use some kind of confidence interval bond as a convenient.
This is the at least you need to fund at least this much. If you can't fund our best guess, you need to fund at least this much.
I just want to say that if you're controlling for this geographical autocorrelation, you might find an attenuation of the confidence interval. So I think that is a great suggestion.
Yes.
Before, and will help you on a political level.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions? Comments? Got plenty of time. Well, then enjoy the. I think it's still sunshine outside. I hope not many of you are living on the East Coast, because I would be concerned about the next major public health event. Okay. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.